Today on the 21st Show, enduring winter is a rite of passage in the Midwest, but our changing climate is giving us a new set of experiences. We'll try to make sense of Midwest winters, past and future. Then, we'll hear from our sister podcast, Weather Realness, about what drove the extreme cold we experienced throughout the state. Plus, how climate change is adjusting our everyday weather, potentially prompting the emergence of new agriculture industries. I'm Brian Mackey. That's all coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WNIJ in Rockford DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, news. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Winter weather is a fact of life in the Midwest. Surviving it has turned into a rite of passage. Maybe you can brag about surviving the polar vortex of 2015, or the great Groundhog Day blizzard of 2011, or the Springfield ice storm of 78, or the Chicago blizzard of 67. But you know, for all the nastiness that can come with the season, there's a lot of appreciation for winter among Midwesterners. As we'll hear, it's different than how other parts of the country reckon with winter. But as with many other parts of our lives, global warming is making big changes to our weather and the ways we experience the season. Take how this winter has played out so far. We're just barely getting out of a bitter cold snap that lasted for well over a week. And next week, some parts of Illinois are expected to hit the 50s. With that in mind, today we're listening back to our conversation on what winter means to us as Midwesterners. We asked our texting group about this when it first aired. Christina in Rock Falls said, "I've never been so ahead of the game in my spring yard and garden cleanup, but having lived in Illinois my entire life, I know enough to keep my snow shovel and salt at the ready for a couple more months." Thanks for that message, Christine. Joining us for this conversation was Taylor K. Phillips. She's a writer and comedian. She has a book called A Guide to Midwestern Conversation. But more to the point for this program, she wrote an article reflecting on how we think about winters for The Atlantic. It came out in 2023. It's called The Secret to Loving Winter. Also with us was Jenna Brooker. She's an environmental reporter for Bridge Detroit, a nonprofit community news outlet. She got our attention because of an article she wrote back in 2022 for the climate-focused media outlet Grist. That story was called "The Midwest Defined Itself by Its Winters: What Happens When They Disappear?" And finally, we were joined by Trent Ford, the Illinois State climatologist. He helped us make sense of what's happening with our winters. Listeners, because this conversation is on tape, again, we originally aired it back in 2024. We're not taking calls, but you can still let us know what you thought. Our email address, talk@21stshow.org. All right, Trent, I'm going to begin with you. I do want to get to the bigger picture of what's happening here, but I guess from this sort of touchy-feely standpoint, what does winter mean to you? Take it where you will.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, one of the things I love about the Midwest and Central Illinois in particular is it's hard, you'd be hard pressed to find a place that has four more distinct seasons. And for me, that growing up in the Peoria area, it was great when you get to October, you're just done with yard work, done with bugs, done with heat, and ready to have a different change of pace. And so winter was that time where you could do things like sledding and other types of recreation, hiking without bugs. I don't have to worry about the yard work, could enjoy your fireplace, those sorts of things. And it was just that change of pace from spring, summer, and fall. So I think the seasonality and what winter brings and how it contrasts all the other seasons is really, I think what was something that means a lot, you know, living in this area.
Taylor, you're in New York now, but you grew up in the Midwest, Missouri specifically. What did winter mean to you and the people around you when you were coming up?
Well, I do live in New York. I'm actually in Missouri right now, where it is 66 degrees. So a very different Missouri winter. than I was used to experiencing. To echo what Trent said, having those four seasons for me, it meant I was a basketball player, and so it meant the sort of influx of basketball season and football season, and sort of the way that we mentally shift to go into, we're gonna have our it's coats time, it's soup time, and just this shift into another phase of life that, there was an element of preparation, of excitement, of the holidays, and then sort of the come down in January and February, where what's left to enjoy is the things that only winter has to offer. So, where's the best sledding hill? Where is, the hot chocolate that you can get and walk around with? And it's just for me now, being in a different place where it's like there is winter on the East Coast, of course, and they talk about it all the time, and I love living there, but it's just a very different vibe. And for me now, it's so associated with nostalgia and childhood, and what winter is what the weather is, and that's what we're sort of dealing with and playing with.
That's
So
great. Yeah.
I do miss
Yeah.
it.
And let's put a pin in that. I am curious about, but I want to come back to that a little later about how other parts of the country, specifically the Northeast, deals with winter or thinks about winter. But Jenna, I want to bring you into the conversation now. And there are these small ways we make the most of winter weather, right? Whether it's sledding we just heard about, building snowmen, that sort of thing, ice skating maybe. What are some of the bigger traditions you've seen, though, that we really celebrate winter with?
I think, one of the oldest winter traditions in the Midwest is the St. Paul Winter Festival. That was started in 1885, I believe. And that was actually started because this reporter from New York visited and said that the winter was unfit for humans to live in. And so they started this festival as a way to show how beautiful winter is. And this past year, they didn't even have snow on the ground when the festival kicked off, and their ice sculptures were melting. So, winter sports and tourism in the US is a $12 billion industry. And so, yes, it's affecting everything from like sledding or just even being able to take a winter walk, but also, ski resorts and ice fishing. There are indigenous communities that rely on ice fishing or maple syrup tapping. And it's impacting, our allergy season, our agricultural systems. So it's having wide impacts, like you alluded to.
Yeah, and we're going to get more into that as we go on. Taylor, you mentioned that idea of how it's a little different in the Northeast. So I think we've been hearing about some of the glass half full perspectives, at least to start with. What is that half empty? How do people in the Northeast talk about winter?
I just remember when I was getting ready to go to college from Missouri to Boston and Massachusetts, I was getting warned about the winters. They were just, are people gonna, are you gonna be able to handle it? Do you have a big enough coat? Or, it's gonna be so brutal up there. And, we had two of the worst winters that Boston had ever had while I was up there. And I have to tell you, to your point earlier, like I'm an ice storm of 2003 girl, and the difference to me felt so much like an attitude. Of course, part of it is that it's not as pretty because when you're in more urban areas, you get that kind of like aesthetic yuck of the slush. But the attitude toward it was it was uncomfortable. It wasn't different. It wasn't like, oh, this is what the cold is, and now we sort of deal with it, which I believe is much more in the Midwestern line of thinking. It's like, oh, this is it. Here's how I'm going to handle it. Here's how I'm going to be proud of how I'm handling it. And the East Coast attitude, and again, no one's a monolith, but the East Coast attitude that I most often encountered was this eye roll of, well, here we go. And I guess, it's going to be this weather today, and we're going to get this many inches. And it was a burden. It was something to be, it was a grievance. Whereas in the Midwest, it was a reality to face with excitement and indignance to what Jenna said. You know, oh, I'm sorry, you're telling me it's not fit for human consumption. Let me make an entire festival about how wrong you are and how much joy we're going to get out of this situation.
Long-standing tradition in the Midwest of thumbing our nose at the people on the coasts, perhaps. Trent Ford, let's now get into some of the sort of climatological things we've been talking about and experiencing. And maybe we can start with a baseline, because there's a map on your state climatologist website that looks at the change in average daily temperatures between 1900 and 2020 by county and season in Illinois. And you know, sometimes I think we talk about and we think about how, oh, summers feel so much hotter. You know, as global warming happens, we're going to have these extreme heat events in the summer. But there's actually been a lot more change in the average winter temperature. That is the map. That is the season that is like this blanket of red on the map. Can you just talk through what that means, how that fits into the bigger picture of what we're talking about?
Yeah, you're right. When we talk about climate change, a lot of that narrative is driven sort of from the national and international perspective. And indeed, when we look at hazards over the next 50 years or so, looking outward in time, extreme heat is one of the biggest, if not the biggest. But when we talk about change, historical change over the last 120, 130 years in Illinois, it's a large part of it has been winter temperatures. So just to put some numbers on it, winter, the since 1900, those maps you referenced there, since 1900, winter average temperature in Illinois has warmed at about 4 to 5 times the rate of summer average temperature. And for the summer, the nights are warming faster than the days, but the same thing is for the winter as well, where our nighttime temperatures in the wintertime, think about the coldest temperatures we can get to in the winter, are warming faster than the daytime temperatures even. And so, you know, the dramatic change as far as what a season feels like in Illinois, and this is just, you know, those maps just show Illinois because that's where I serve. But when we look at the broader Midwest, it's the same pattern. It's really the winter that's been experiencing the bulk of the at least the temperature change across the Midwest since the Industrial Revolution.
What do you understand is the reason for that? Why are our winters so much more affected by this than our summers have been so far?
See, now you stepped in it. So that's a good question. It's not there's not necessarily a reason. This is absolutely the reason that winters are warming at a faster rate than the other seasons are concerned. With that being said, with the winter, we are under the it naturally is the most dynamic time of the year from a temperature standpoint. So even without climate change, when we think about day to day, week to week, it's the most dynamic because we are under the influence of both the subpolar and the polar jet streams. We can change the type of air that we're experiencing from the Gulf of Mexico, as you referenced today. It's going to be in the 70s because we're getting that southerly air up from the Gulf. But then with cold front swings through, we can get that big polar blast. And I think one of the big reasons we've seen the warming, particularly in the wintertime, is because that warmer air from the Gulf is getting warmer, yes, but particularly the colder air up from central Canada, from the Arctic, that swings down, that brings us our historic Arctic outbreaks, is warming at an even faster rate. I think a lot of folks probably heard of Arctic amplification or polar amplification. That's the idea that the Arctic is warming at a much faster rate than all other regions on Earth. And we're experiencing that because that's a big source region for a lot of our coldest winter air. So when that air is warming naturally, then, or not naturally by humans, but naturally we're going to experience that impact. And so that's one of the multiple reasons that we're seeing you know, winter warming at such a disproportionate rate to the other seasons.
You know, there was just an article in the Chicago Tribune mentioning that ice coverage for the Great Lakes is in the single digits. And Jenna, I know you looked at that for your story in The Grist some years back. What have you seen there? How does what we're seeing now fit into that trend?
Yeah, I think it's only that article I wrote 2 years ago, it's only gotten worse. I believe that this year was like a historic low for the Great Lakes ice cover, and that impacts, you know, every species in the lake. That impacts, you know, Michigan canceled the lake sturgeon ice fishing season this year for the first time in history. There's a lake here outside of Detroit, and you know, on the Detroit River, and normally you'd be able to ice fish on it for a few months out of the year. This year, there was one day that people could ice fish on it from the docks. And it's also gonna, you know, the decrease in ice cover also impacts the invasive species that are in the Great Lakes, like zebra and quagga mussels. And yeah, just what species we'll be able to fish and what we'll see.
Trent, we need to take a break in a couple of minutes, but before we do, there's also this other phenomenon we're experiencing called weather whiplash. I mentioned the high forecast for today, Monday, as we're going to air, is 72 degrees. Just a week ago, I was took a hike in thick snow, real thick enough snow that people had been cross-country skiing, which I have not seen in central Illinois in some number of years now. Talk about that, this idea of this whiplash, right? That people are experiencing.
Yeah, what that really gets to, Brian, is variability. So we think about climate change as this monotonous trend that's just increasing or decreasing depending on where you are and what you're talking about. But we have weather variability superimposed on that long-term trend. And in some cases, we can witness an increase or a decrease in that variability. I think there's a lot less known about the drivers and the direction of that change and the variability of day-to-day temperatures, where you can go from the 70s to the 30s to the 20s back to the 70s and that sort of thing in the course of a week. But that's something that we're watching as well, because a lot of times the impacts, whether it just comes from individual winter weather events or the impacts that Jenna spoke to about long-term winter warming, a lot of those come from that variability. So something that this weather whiplash is what that speaks to, and it's something that we're having to do a lot more work on and trying to identifying and predicting.
All right, we're going to continue this conversation on Midwest winters, what it means for us, and how we're dealing with the changes with our warming planet as we are experiencing it. That's after a short break. This is the 21st Show. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're listening back to our conversation about climate change and what it means for the winters we as Midwesterners have come to expect over time and how our expectations are being upended. Joining us for this conversation was Trent Ford, the Illinois State climatologist, environmental reporter Jenna Brooker with Bridge Detroit. She wrote an article back in 2022 for the climate-focused media outlet Grist called "The Midwest Defined Itself by Its Winters: What Happens When They Disappear?" And Taylor K. Phillips, who's a writer and comedian. Her book is called A Guide to Midwestern Conversation. She also wrote a piece for The Atlantic back in 2023 called The Secret to Loving Winter. All right, we have talked about a number of the changes we've been experiencing. And I don't know, Taylor, let me ask you about this idea of weather whiplash and how that maybe has affected you and the people in your life. This idea, as I mentioned, as we're going to air on Monday, the forecast high, at least in central Illinois, is 72 degrees. It was below freezing over the weekend. How are you and the people you know experiencing this?
Well, I mean, whiplash is the absolute perfect term for it. I'm in Missouri right now, dealing with a family thing, and I have something as simple as I packed weird. Like I didn't know what to bring for a Midwestern winter. It's 66 here in Missouri, in Kansas City, right now. On Wednesday, it's supposed to be 19. And as somebody who now has older parents who are living further away, there's this weird kind of safety element where it's like I don't necessarily know what to anticipate. I think that there is a feeling, the sort of suspended anxiety a little bit, to be slightly dramatic with it, where you feel unsettled and unable to kind of settle in to this, I think, very Midwestern attitude of agreement with Mother Nature. You're like, okay, well, for the next week or two, I am prepared with my coat and my plans to live life in this way. And there's no way to do that. And it is quite emotionally unsettling to kind of not know how you're going to interact with your environment with consistency on any given day.
You know, that's such an interesting point. I hadn't really noticed that, but I'm doing that myself. I'm wearing short sleeves today, but for the past month or two, I've been carrying around in my car a fleece and also a down jacket, hat, gloves, and face mask, because you never really know from, you know, week to week what sort of guard you're going to need against this weather. That's a great point. You know, Jenna, we've talked about some of these bigger picture changes, some of the traditions being upended. There are a lot of other aspects of life that are changing with this too. Sarah in Rockford in our texting group told us, "I'm torn. It's such a double-edged sword. On one hand, I don't have to dig a path through the snow to the barns and haul water to the animals every single day. Winter life is easier, but without a deep killing freeze, bugs and other pests won't be controlled, making it more expensive to garden and grow food." And Jenna, what have you seen in terms of those changes in your reporting?
I could not agree more. It is such a double-edged sword. Here in Michigan, we are supposed to become prime wine country because of the warmer temperatures. And that is so sad, but also just interesting and, you know, could be exciting for our local tourism industry and agricultural industry. And then on the other hand, you have the cherry farmers who are having to experience all of this weather whiplash, and their trees are very sensitive to the weather changes. And so cherry production is going down in Michigan. And right now we're the number one tart cherry producer for the country and cherry capital of the world. And so that's another thing that is like part of our identity, specifically here in Michigan, that is being threatened by climate change. But then you do have the, you know, more warm days to go for a walk, and maybe you are going to have more wine festivals and become more well known around the country and the world for our wines. And, you know, maybe we'll have cheaper winter heating bills, but then more expensive air conditioning bills in the summer. So I really do see this double-edged sword with all regards with how climate change is impacting our daily lives in the Midwest.
Trent, what about you on that, right? These wild winter swings. What is that going to mean for the world around us, these small things that make a big difference in our lives?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just use the example of that from this winter. You know, I've seen some of the, I guess the, I don't know, the hardened or more bold ice fisher folks out in Champaign County fishing on the lakes in the very short period we had to do ice fishing and in what looked like ice that I wouldn't even stand on, let alone try to drill a hole on. And those kind of traditions, I mean, same thing with sledding. You know, I just remember growing up, we would go out for at least a week or two where we had snow on the ground, and now we get lucky to get 1 or 2 days. So, you know, these from a recreation standpoint, it definitely does make a difference. Kind of Jenna alluded to, there are other things that we can do. So, you know, it can be more pleasant to walk around. And you know, one thing that hasn't really been pointed out yet is the decrease in the exposure risk of extreme cold for especially housing insecure folks around the region. I mean, that is one thing that we can point to say from an emergency management, from a public health standpoint, could be a benefit. But yeah, I think whoever was it who texted in from Rockford has it exactly right, that when it comes to winter change, there are, it is really a mixed bag of things that could be good that we could look forward to and things that we are losing. And I think for me, just real quick about the sledding in particular, it sounds like it's so silly compared to everything else going on in climate change, but my reaction to only having a couple days to sled with my 6-year-old is almost like a grief process. And it's mild, right, compared to other things that are going on. But it is interesting how that sort of reaction to that change is there.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I was reflecting on this. I have a friend who has been hiking in the Chicagoland area at this former toboggan run in the Palos area. And I remember going tobogganing there. And at some point, the Cook County Forest Preserve decided to shut it down. But I wonder if that hadn't happened for whatever reason, and I don't actually know why that was, it was a couple decades ago, if it would even be sustainable today to have that sort of activity in that area. Taylor, I want to bring you back now because I mentioned earlier your book, A Guide to Midwestern Conversation. There is quite a bit in there about how we talk about the weather. This is a thing, right? I don't know if you've ever seen the Ray Gun t-shirt company that's very Midwestern focused, has a number of hilarious shirts that sort of focus on the way people in the Midwest talk about the weather. You know, how have you seen people reckoning with how to talk about these changes in the weather?
Well, I think that it's a really interesting intersection of the way that Midwesterners sort of converse and have these social interactions. I love Ray Gun for their ability to kind of bring in this Midwestern ability and humor and the politics of it. And I think that, you know, with, you know, Jenna's incredible reporting and Trent's work, you know, we're so clear that the weather right now is a political issue with incredible political and economic implications for the way that we live our lives, which puts it in a very kind of new and complicated place in the Midwestern conversational lexicon now, because it used to be the safe thing. It used to be the way that you communicated to people, like, you know, I have the same attitude toward you. That's it's the, you know, the not so bad without the wind, the not so bad without the humidity, the let's comment on what we're experiencing outside, find this common ground, acknowledge to one another that we're going to ignore the central tenet of the discomfort and say, you know, we're finding the silver lining here. And now I think, I'm sure there are lots of conversations about the new things we can do, or we're loving this weather, or the sun's out. And there's kind of an awkwardness to making this safe conversation now so entrenched in politics. And I hope and I'm interested in the way that it's going to swerve, because for a lot of Midwesterners, politics is not a small talk conversation. You don't kind of walk in and say, wow, it's really warm outside, and then want to get into why or the implications of that fact and the fact that it's probably not going to change. And what does that mean for us as a community? So it really adds a layer to those, that weather commentary small talk that we've kind of clung to for so long. And it will be very interesting to see how it continues to shift.
You know, that was such a great transition to a text message we got from one of our listeners. Ryan in Champaign was pretty unhappy with our framing of this conversation. He said, I don't care about social traditions. Our climate is collapsing and our governments aren't doing anything necessary to save us. We are looking forward to collapsing food systems, mass migrations, and mass death. These changes will probably lead to world war. Get some perspective. The way you've been framing stories has been disheartening. So I'll say thank you for sharing your perspective, Ryan. And Jenna, this message, it's ultimately media criticism. And I guess maybe there are people out there who would have liked us to open with some, you know, disaster movie theme music and spend the next 40 minutes talking about how we're all doomed. I wonder, as someone who has written for a climate-focused publication in the past, how do you think we in the media should be communicating these issues with our listeners and readers?
You know, I can do both. To that person that texted in, last year there was research that a combined heat wave and power outage in Detroit could be more deadly than Hurricane Katrina. Allergies are getting worse, and that's impacting our, you know, our work productivity and our mental well-being. Like, I completely agree. This stuff is scary and it's serious. I think a lot of stories like that are about climate change. And so I think this was one of the a few stories I've actually done as it relates to culture and climate change. And I think I liked doing this story because to me, it feels like a way into the conversation for people that don't know about climate change or might not agree with it. Because at the end of the day, you know, you have all these Midwesterners who love their traditions, as we've established, ice fishing, you know, snowmobiling. I learned today that Wisconsin is like the number one state in the country for snowmobile registration. So there are all these people that might not be tapped into what climate change is, but talking about how climate change is impacting their beloved traditions is a way in. And I think we all need to get on the same page if we're going to make progress on this issue.
And that's such a great point, and I like the way you frame that. And Trent, you and I have talked about this before, right? Because especially you think about the rural counties of Illinois, they are not voting for politicians who say that climate change is an existential issue for America and Illinois. And yet they are experiencing these changes in their lives. What do you think, as Trent, part of your job is as a science communicator, what do you make of this?
Yeah. Well, there's, I mean, you know, I don't want to downplay the active and very well-funded mis and disinformation campaign that's been going on for decades against climate change. So that is always something that it's not necessarily a, we just need to communicate better because we have a pretty hefty competition in that realm. That's still going on, unfortunately. Yeah, I mean, I just want to respond real quick when you talk about the cultural impacts. I so appreciated Jenna's piece on that. And when you think about, and it kind of made me reflect, as I mentioned, you know, if we don't have our, these cultural things are not something to just scoff at. They're really important aspects of our lives. And that's the case across the board. And so, you know, we can talk about all day, and I'm sure, you know, Brian, we'll have a heat wave and you may have me on. We could talk about extreme heat and the problems during the summertime, but these things are really important. Even if it's just, we can't sled as often, that's a really big, important piece that we need to talk about as well. As far as the who's voting for politicians and things like that, I mean, the biggest things are that climate change is happening. It's causing impacts in Illinois, and it's going to continue to cause impacts unless we reduce and eliminate greenhouse gas emissions now until, you know, 2030, 2040, we have a really short time of meeting at least the 2 Celsius warming goals that have set forth by the IPCC. So this is a big problem. But the impacts of climate change are big, and they're varied there. And we can discuss all aspects of climate change impacts, and we need to, so we can understand how folks are being, are experiencing them, and that we can communicate with each other on our kind of lived experience as we're working through this.
Jenna, briefly, we're coming to the end of our time together, but how have you seen people reckoning with these changes? Is there an acceptance, especially among those people maybe who don't think about climate as something that they worry about a lot of the time?
I think we're still figuring it out. I think we see people, I guess it seems like people are still trying to hold on to these traditions, you know, more snow machines or just trying to really embrace the few ice fishing days we have left, or maybe going more up north. So I think we're all kind of trying to figure out how to adapt to this. And I guess, you know, just really appreciating the snow and the cold when it does come, because it might not last for long.
Taylor, I hope we can end on a little more of a philosophical note. That article you wrote in The Atlantic is called The Secret to Loving Winter. It's been out for a year now, so maybe we can spoil it. I mean, even with all this change, what is that secret? What makes winter still worth appreciating?
I mean, I think the argument in the piece is that what makes winter worth appreciating is the fact that it's the reality, and that's what we need to sort of accept, and that Midwesterners are great at that. I hope to both Jenna and Trent's points that we as Midwesterners are going to be able to take the information that we have about climate change and start treating that as the reality that it is. I think there's a quote in Jenna's piece by someone who has to cancel an event that he just says, that's Mother Nature and it's unfortunate. And I think that I hope that we Midwesterners continue to take this information in the way that we've always done, which is to make the best of it, but also work to make it work for us. And that people like Jenna and Trent keep doing their work, and Midwesterners keep hearing it and responding to it with our level of fortitude and joy, and that little chip on our shoulder that says, if you're telling us that we can't do something, we're going to make a whole festival about how we can.
Yeah. And is it Mother Nature or is it Father Industry? Maybe that's a conversation that we can keep having with our Midwestern friends and relatives. Taylor K. Phillips is the author of the book, A Guide to Midwestern Conversation. The Atlantic article is The Secret to Loving Winter. I don't think I mentioned this. She's also a writer for The John Oliver Show. Taylor, thanks so much for being with us. Also to Jenna Brooker, thank you for being with us with Bridge Detroit. Her article is The Midwest Defined Itself by Its Winters. What happens when they disappear? That was in The Grist, I should say. And Trent Ford is the Illinois State climatologist. Thank you all so much for being with us today on the 21st Show. All right, we'll have links to all those articles on our website, 21stshow.org. More to come after a short break. It's the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And for the rest of the hour today, we're going to continue to talk about the weather we've been experiencing. But this time, we're going to pivot to our sister program, Weather Realness, from Illinois Public Media. It's a weekly radio show and podcast produced in collaboration with our producer, IPM, and the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign's Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences. They recently talked about what a warming climate means for winters across Illinois and how the changing climate could mean we could see the emergence of new agricultural industries across the state. Stephen Nesbitt, a professor of meteorology and atmospheric sciences at the U of I in Urbana-Champaign, spoke about this with co-host Trent Ford, the Illinois State climatologist, returning for the final part of our show, and the host of Weather Realness, Maddie Stover. Again, because this part of the program's on tape, we're not taking calls live, but you can let us know what you think. Our email address is talk@21stshow.org.
So, Steve, let's go to you. With all the cold weather we've been experiencing in central Illinois this winter, how is it still true that the climate overall is warming?
Yeah, I think we'll talk a little bit later about how extraordinary this winter has been so far. Of course, I'm here in Houston, but even down here in the south, we're talking about potentially freezing weather in Miami and with the next storm. So this is pretty incredible. But this is entirely consistent with the idea that in an overall warming climate, that certainly means that, of course, on average, our temperatures might be increasing. But that says nothing about what's happening either on a local scale. So, for example, there could be regions that actually have the opposite trend. And just as an example, you know, just because everything's going up on average doesn't mean that one or two things can't be going down. So that's certainly an effect, and that has physical reasons for that on a regional and local basis. But then also, there's also the sort of effect of variability and how that might change in a global warming scenario. So even though on average our winters might be getting warmer, let's say in central Illinois, it doesn't mean that we might not experience storm systems that might produce cold air outbreaks within our region that might be even more extreme than we've seen in the past. And it might lead to changes in patterns that might lead to those things becoming more frequent in the wintertime versus other times of the year. And everybody's probably heard by now this term polar vortex that gets used and somehow misused in the media. There's been a lot of research that's looked at whether changes in the polar vortex will potentially amplify or not, leading to more extreme cold air outbreaks in the United States in the winter. I think the jury is still out on this. This is a very active area of research, but it's never been the case that because climate scientists have said things are going to warm on average, that means we're out of the woods in the wintertime in terms of having extreme impacts like we're seeing right now.
So just to clarify, so the kind of among climate science, the verdict is still out on whether we'll be getting kind of strong activity from the polar vortex as a trend of climate change?
Yeah, I would say there's actually quite a bit of back and forth in the literature about this. And it's a tricky problem because we're dealing with a phenomenon that originates in the stratosphere. And the polar vortex sits up within the polar stratosphere. Traditionally, our weather and climate models don't have a lot of resolution in those layers. And so there's a lot of variability amongst the models. Even the current weather models between Europe and the United States, actually, we've seen here at the AMS meeting that they disagree a lot about what happens in the stratosphere. And we're actually, our community is doing a field campaign. NASA is planning a field campaign in the coming years to actually fly high altitude aircraft into that region. To collect information about the structure of the polar vortex and improving the representation of those things in our weather models. So This is an active area of research. We've obviously identified that polar vortex disruptions, which are what cause the intrusion of cold air into mid-latitudes oftentimes, are very important, but it turns out that we need to do a better job at predicting them and understanding them on weather and climate timescales.
And about what altitudes are the stratosphere? Like, what altitudes would these planes be flying at?
Yeah, so it varies a lot. And during the summertime, the stratosphere is way up, let's say around 11 to 15 kilometers even. But in the wintertime, it's a lot lower. And it can be down even around 5 or 6 kilometers, which is about, I would say, 3 or so miles above the surface. So as that wintertime air, the polar vortex, actually the stratosphere is much lower than it is during the rest of the time of year. And that temperature contrast actually is what drives the polar jet stream.
So, Trent, kind of, taking more of a broader view, how is climate change going to change winter in central Illinois going forward generally?
Steve's discussion of the polar vortex and our current weather situation in the context of climate change really sets this up well. So, the most significant climate change signal in Illinois, not just in winter, for all seasons, is an increase in winter temperatures going on over the last 130 years. Winter has warmed at a much faster rate than all the other seasons combined. And just to give you an idea of winter here, meteorological winter from December through February, that's how we're defining winter here. And so warmer winters are the trend. And when we look at temperatures within the wintertime, just day-to-day temperatures, it's actually the very coldest days that are warming the fastest rate. But this is where we can separate, and we need to separate weather from climate, especially when we think about what we care about. So what we care about is suitability for plants, maybe a type of cultivar of crop, then the overall winter average temperature does matter. If we care about people, vulnerable people being impacted by extreme cold, well, this year has proven, 2019 has proven, and Steve just talked about how we can get extreme cold that can be impactful for humans and plants and animals and infrastructure, even in a warmer winter climate. And so, when we think about winter weather impacts, it's an important to have the nuanced conversation of here's how climate change is changing the climate in winter, but here's really important implications for weather. Another one is that we really haven't seen, we would expect that a warming winter trend would also yield less snowfall, right? So, like warmer air, less snowfall. When we look at the long-term records of snowfall, not just in central Illinois, but in northern Illinois as well, we don't see a consistent long-term trend. Part of that is that year-to-year variability of snowfall is just through the roof, more than probably any other variable. But also, even though we've had recent years where we haven't gotten a lot of snow, we've also had some recent years this year, 2019, where we've gotten quite a bit of snow. And in fact, having that warming trend means that during the heart of winter, kind of this time, late January, early February, now we have more days where our high temperatures and our average temperatures aren't in the teens and 20s. They're in the high 20s and low 30s, which is ideal for snow production. So we can get snow. There's no such thing as too cold to snow. Generally speaking, though, we don't yield as much snow when we get those temperatures in the single digits or below zero. The right ideal conditions for having enough moisture in the air and to produce snow is right there in the upper 20s, maybe even low 30s. And so having more frequent temperatures around that range in the heart of winter can actually produce more snow, which sort of runs counterintuitive to what we think about long-term trends, but at the same time is that really important interplay between climate and weather. So when it comes to like winter weather and climate change, it really does depend on what we care about. If we care about these really extreme temperatures, just one-off weather kind of events, then the overall prognosis will be different than if we care about something like, for example, perennial agriculture that'll respond to the season as a whole.
Yeah, I feel like a very important theme of this discussion is that it's not simple. It's very nuanced. It's not just getting warmer. There's lots of detail here.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that this is a great example that we're experiencing right now, but here in winter, but basically every aspect of climate change is that way. Is there's no such thing as, you know, climate change affects really complex systems, ecological systems, human systems, and so those interactions are just, you know, going to be complex themselves.
Could you expand a little bit more on what you alluded to, kind of warmer average temperatures in the winter and the impact on perennial growing?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting area of research that the Midwest has kind of been left out of, other than Michigan. When we think about agriculture in the Midwest, especially Illinois, it's corn and beans, and those don't really interact too much with winter weather. Then there's winter wheat, but it's dormant during the winter. But, you know, we do have a very, very important productive perennial crop production. That could be tree fruit, apples, plums, peaches, cherries, as well as a perennial production in kind of semi-protected sort of areas like high hoop houses and things like that. And especially when it comes to the tree fruit, the vineyards, the berry patches, those plants are responding to winter weather. And this warming trend that we're seeing has sort of elicited a concern among growers of changes in how those trees or those bushes, those vineyards are going to respond and when they break dormancy. The kind of overall simplistic view is warmer winter means that the trees will break dormancy earlier and therefore put themselves at a higher risk of spring freeze problems. Because again, distinguishing between climate and weather, the overall average winter temperature is a climate phenomenon. When the last spring freeze occurs is more of a weather phenomenon. Lots of variability year to year. So that's something that we've actually been looking at, is how this winter trend, temperature trend, has changed what we call winter chilling and the dormancy break kind of timing of apple, peach trees, and then other types of plants as well. What we see is that we can have an earlier dormancy break overall and an earlier kind of spring phenology on apples and peaches because of this warming trend, particularly in central northern Illinois and then north of there. Not so much of a signal in southern Illinois. But interestingly enough, the spring freezes are becoming earlier into the spring at a faster rate. So it's basically this race between when the tree wakes up and when we're getting spring freezes. But overall, we do see that change. And our model suggests there isn't necessarily an increased risk of spring freeze damage in the future because of that winter warming. That being said, in parts of the upper Midwest, we also see an increase in suitability for types of perennial crops that we may not have been able to grow up there before. So it would not surprise me if 20, 30 years down the road, we look to commercially viable peach orchards in southern Wisconsin, for example. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. So Steve, kind of thinking about kind of climate change, environmental impacts, many listeners will be familiar with acid rain, especially, you know, folks who were active, you know, 70s, 80s. But does air pollution have an impact on snow?
So that's an interesting question. So I would say in general, the differences are pretty small. The reason that we know this is that we've actually done experiments in atmospheric sciences. And let's not get our conspiracy hats on here too much. But there's been activities in what we call cloud seeding. This is a type of weather modification that's often done in water-scarce regions like the Western United States, where either on the surface or on aircraft, we actually put tiny aerosol particles that are meant to modify the structure of the tiny particles that initially form ice crystals in the cloud. And the idea is that if you have the right conditions and you add more of these particles, they're could be interactions with some of the other particles that would cause more ice particles to form. There has been conclusive work that's been done in the state of Idaho a few years ago that showed you could increase snowfall by as much as about 4%. So what that does is it gives us important sort of bounds on how much, you know, aerosols and tiny pollution particles can impact the snow. And the answer is it's probably on the order of a few percent or less.
Trent Ford is the state climatologist with the Prairie Research Institute, and Steve Nesbitt is the head of the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign.
Thank you again to the Weather Realness team for putting that conversation together. You can find a link to them through our website, which is 21stshow.org. That's all the time we have on our program today. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Coulson Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.